This Morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another warship collision. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Monday, August 21st, glad you're on board. Here's what we have for you this hour.
10 sailors are missing and a handful of others were injured when the USS John S. McCain collided with a tanker yesterday in the waters off Singapore.
President Trump delivers a primetime address to the nation tonight about the war in Afghanistan.
The 99-year wait is over. The country will experience a total solar eclipse today for the first time since 1918.
And new research about how the oldest kindergartners perform later in their school years.
There's been evidence for a while now that there are advantages to being older rather than younger in your class. Evidence that you tend to perform better in school if you're further along in your development, you've had more time to prepare for kindergarten. What's not clear and the evidence has been mixed on is whether those effects last.
Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Lubsdorf about the edge in college admissions. He's here in about 20 minutes. 10 sailors are missing and 5 injured after the USS John S. McCain collided with a tanker east of Singapore. The U.S. Navy said 4 of those injured were medically evacuated by a Singapore Navy helicopter with non-life-threatening injuries. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The collision occurred in waters called the Strait of Malacca. The Navy says search and rescue efforts were launched in coordination with local authorities. Initial reports indicated the guided missile destroyer sustained damage to the left rear of the ship, with significant damage to sleeping areas and communication equipment. The incident comes 2 months after the USS Fitzgerald was damaged in a collision off the coast of Japan that killed 7 sailors. Overall, it's the 4th mishap for the U.S. Navy ships in the Pacific since February. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. The warship, by the way, is named after the grandfather and father of Arizona Senator John McCain. They were both admirals in the Navy. The vessel it collided with, by the way, the Alnick MC, is a 600-foot oil and chemical tanker. President Trump will address the nation in a primetime speech this evening about the war in Afghanistan. The expectation is that he'll announce a modest increase in U.S. troops, which currently number 8,400. Mr. Trump has long been skeptical of the U.S. approach in the region, telling advisors in a meeting last month that, quote, we're not winning. The Afghan war is in its 16th year, the longest American conflict in history. Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland was on Fox News Sunday.
We have invested a great deal in Afghanistan. Our objective needs to be that we have a regime in Afghanistan that can maintain some semblance of security so that we don't see growing terrorist organizations again within Afghanistan.
Mr. Trump reached his decision on Afghanistan after lengthy talks with his aides at Camp David, Maryland on Friday. The United States invaded Afghanistan in October 2001. After the September 11 attacks on New York and Washington and overthrew the Islamist Taliban government. But U.S. forces have remained bogged down there through the Bush and Obama presidencies. Afghan security forces have struggled to prevent advances by Taliban insurgents. The different forces have launched 2 separate offensives against Islamic State. One of those offenses is in Lebanon. The other is in Iraq, in the city of Tal Afar, considered one of Islamic State's last important strongholds. Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Maria Abi Habib explains that the attacks are solidifying a de facto alliance between the U.S. and Iran, longtime opponents who are trying to drive ISIS from the last remaining territory it holds. Maria, what's going on?
So at this moment, while Europe is unraveling terror networks at home and trying to prevent future attacks. At this moment, we see in Lebanon and Iraq kind of like the last battles being fought against ISIS. Last battles being fought against its caliphate, though. We should be very clear about that, because what we're seeing is as they're, you know, uprooted from cities and towns, they're going underground in like a traditional guerrilla-style insurgency hit-and-run attack. No longer, you know, commanding an army that's invading territories or behaving like an army would with command and control structures. But the problem is that the U.S. finds itself in a tricky situation, which is that it has two main objectives in the Middle East. One is to defeat ISIS, and the second one is to counter Iran. While the U.S. is investing equipment and training into regular armies of the Middle East, conventional armies, such as the Lebanese military or the Iraqi military, Iran is actually investing in the militia groups that are also inside these countries, the Hezbollah in Lebanon and groups like the Bezid organization, which is a militia in Iraq. And these two factions are both fighting ISIS. So in some senses, America kind of needs the Iranian militias for its first objective, which is to defeat ISIS, but it creates kind of a tricky situation when you want to counter Iran. So the U.S. is in a real catch-22 here.
Yeah, you point out, too, this it's kind of a, or somebody said in your story, there's a contradiction in U.S. foreign policy regarding ISIS and Iran.
Yeah, very much so. Because, you know, on one hand, you know, the U.S. is kind of tolerating to an extent, these Iranian militias. I mean, you know, might not be supporting them, but giving some sort of like turning a blind eye, let's say. And for Tal Afar, which is the battle that's being currently fought in Iraq, with Tal Afar, what we're seeing is that the prime minister of Iraq, which is a U.S. ally, is being very, very, cagey and very vague about who's actually leading the battle for Tal Afar. And the thinking is that the militias will play a significant role in the battle for Tal Afar, like they weren't, you know, playing in Mosul, because the counterterrorism forces, which the U.S. has trained up in Iraq, have been so spent and seen so many casualties from Mosul. So now, you know, the Shia militias that are trained up by Iran kind of are really relied upon right now for this Tal Afar battle. That's the worry.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Maria Abi Habib in Beirut, Lebanon. She's got a piece about these offensives in Iraq and Lebanon, highlighting a de facto alliance between the U.S. and Iran. How about the importance overall of Tal Afar in Iraq and maybe what happens after that once it's secured, assuming it will be?
Well, Tal Afar is important because a lot of Mosulites will say that actually, it's kind of where ISIS was able to kind of go underground to when it was. So ISIS was Al Qaeda in Iraq, and during the surge of American forces there in 2007, they successfully kind of fought Al Qaeda to the point where it had to go underground as a further underground, let's say, as a guerrilla group. And Tal Afar was kind of where they worked out in the open. And so when Mosul was finally occupied, some Mosul residents will tell you that a lot of the people who came to occupy Mosul and fly the banner of Islamic State were actually people from Tal Afar. Not to say that the people of Mosul also didn't have a hand in, you know, in perpetrating the rule of ISIS there.
Thanks, Maria. Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Maria Abi Habib from Beirut, Lebanon. 14 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. Actor, filmmaker, entertainer, and comedian Jerry Lewis has died. The Associated Press calls him a final link to the old Borscht Belt culture. that also turned out Mel Brooks and Henny Youngman to the nightclub circuit, where entertainers such as himself, Frank Sinatra, and his old partner Dean Martin got their starts.
Hey, Dean,
yeah.
Do you know where the Declaration of Independence was signed?
Sure.
Where?
At the bottom. At the bottom.
At the bottom. Yeah.
He was the sole author of his best work, serving as star, writer, director, and producer of the 1963 hit film The Nutty Professor.
What'll it be? Ah, that's no way to talk. What'll it be? That's no way to treat a customer. Come here, try it like this. Pay attention, you'll feel better and the customers will be happier.
Later generations knew Mr. Lewis primarily as the host of the Labor Day Muscular Dystrophy Association, which always ended with his personal anthem, You'll Never Walk Alone. Since the 1960s, those telethons raised about $1.5 billion. He died yesterday at his home in Las Vegas. Jerry Lewis was 91. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the USS John S. McCain has docked at Singapore's naval base with significant damage to its hull after an early morning collision with an oil tanker as vessels from several nations search for 10 missing U.S. sailors. The collision east of Singapore between the guided missile destroyer and the 600-foot tanker was the second involving a ship from the Navy's 7th Fleet in the Pacific in 2 months. Four sailors were evacuated by helicopter to a hospital for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries. U.S. and South Korean troops kicked off their annual drills today that come after President Trump and North Korea exchange warlike rhetoric in the wake of the North's two intercontinental ballistic missile tests last month. Republican Congressman Peter King of New York told Fox News this training is necessary.
South Korea and the United States have to show North Korea how serious we are. The United States is not going to be driven from South Korea. South Korea needs us. We need South Korea.
The drills are largely computer-simulated war games held every summer and have drawn a furious response from North Korea, which said they could trigger the uncontrollable phase of a nuclear war. People with telescopes, cameras, and protective glasses are staking out viewing spots along a narrow corridor from Oregon to South Carolina to watch the moon blot out the midday sun today in what promises to be the most observed and photographed eclipse in history. Astronomer Derek Pitts made his way to St. Joseph's, Missouri.
It's about us as people experiencing this phenomenon and our reaction to it and how it affects or changes us. That's really most interesting.
It's the first total solar eclipse to sweep coast to coast across the U.S. in practically a century. And 72 years after its sinking by a Japanese submarine, the World War II heavy cruiser USS Indianapolis has been found in the Pacific Ocean, 18,000 feet beneath the surface. The Indianapolis was destroyed, returning from its secret mission to deliver parts for the atomic bomb that was later used on Hiroshima. Of the 1,196 men on board, only 316 were rescued, the largest loss of life at sea in the history of the U.S. Navy. Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, who led the civilian search team, calls the discovery truly humbling.
The science behind that, to me, is fascinating.
Isn't it amazing? 72 years it took?
72 years. That's more than 3 miles beneath the surface.
That's crazy.
Wow. Good story. Thank you, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Hello Rewards is our way of saying thank you to guests at Lexington and Red Lion Hotels. Enjoy our best rates and personalized perks. Book your hotel stay today. There are advantages to being one of the oldest kids in kindergarten. Better performance later in school and perhaps higher odds of graduating from a top-tier college. Wall Street Journal economics reporter Ben Lubsdorf has a look at new research. Ben, what are some findings?
Well, there's been evidence for a while now that there are advantages to being older rather than younger in your class. Evidence that you tend to perform better in school if you're further along in your development, you've had more time to prepare for kindergarten. What's not clear and the evidence has been mixed on is whether those effects last, whether you continue to see benefits into high school and beyond. So there's this new study that looked at data from Florida, and they found they took advantage of the fact that in Florida, the cutoff for enrolling in kindergarten is September 1st. So they compared children born in August, who'd be the youngest in their class, to children born in September, who'd be the oldest in their class. And they found a pretty significant gap in test scores. And they also found, looking at one county in particular, that the September-born children were more likely to attend college, more likely to graduate from college, and more likely to graduate from a selective college. They were also less likely to end up incarcerated for juvenile crimes.
Are there social implications for the older kids here?
There could be, and I think that all these researchers would agree that it's really something parents need to think about when they're enrolling their children in school. There's this practice, redshirting is what it's called, where parents will hold back their kid a year, not enroll them in kindergarten on time, so they have an extra year to develop. That seems to be more common among wealthier parents, and it makes sense. If you are keeping your child out of kindergarten for an extra year, you need an extra year of child care on your own. But there does seem to be some evidence in this study that low-income children are more likely to be held back in their early years, have to repeat a grade. So it looks like they may be getting some of the same benefits of redshirting, even at the other end of the economic spectrum.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal economics reporter Ben Lubsdorf. His piece is called "The Oldest Kids in the Class May Get an Edge in College Admissions." Any breakdowns between boys and girls?
There was some evidence in the study that the benefits of redshirting might be more benefits for boys than for girls. But it does look like in the study that there are benefits for there could be benefits for a lot of children of that, with the caveat that some of that evidence isn't quite as definitive as the other findings in the paper.
Thanks, Ben's Wall Street Journal economics reporter, Ben Lubsdorf. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Omaha Steaks offers a huge variety, from premium steaks to skillet meals. This summer, I've enjoyed grilling them at barbecues. They also make the perfect business gift. Their gifts offer unique home cooking experiences from a trusted brand known for quality. Right now, you can experience for yourself what makes these business gifts so unique with an exclusive offer. Order the perfect business gift to try the Omaha Steaks gift experience for yourself, or send it as a gift. The perfect business gift includes 4 bacon-wrapped tri-tip steaks, 4 Omaha Steaks burgers, 4 gourmet franks, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 kielbasa sausages, plus free shipping and 4 caramel apple tartlets. This exclusive package is only $59.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, type deal in the search bar, and choose the perfect business gift. Again, omahasteaks.com. Enter the code DEAL in the search bar to send or experience this exclusive gift package for only $59.99.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, August 21. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: 10 sailors missing after a U.S. warship collided with a tanker off of Singapore. President Trump addresses the nation tonight regarding Afghanistan. Total solar eclipse today as the moon temporarily blocks the sun. Entertainer Jerry Lewis has died at 91. The Missouri lawmaker who expressed hope on Facebook that President Trump would be assassinated has apologized, says she still won't resign. Big Ben is going silent in London for 4 years of repair work. And why sloths have enjoyed such unusual popularity lately. That story in about 20 minutes. Local and state government agencies from Oregon to Connecticut say they're using a Russian brand of security software despite the federal government's instructions to its own agencies not to buy the software over concerns about cyber espionage. It's an exclusive story from Washington Post investigative reporter Aaron Davis. Aaron, what have you uncovered?
Well, we've been taking a look at this antivirus software, security software, kind of suite of packages. It comes under the label Kaspersky Lab. And if you've bought a laptop from Best Buy or from Walmart in recent years, this might have come glued to the package as one of the security programs that you could run. It's become fairly widespread in use globally, 400 million users, 270,000 companies, and they've been marketing themselves under a subsidiary to the government in the U.S., to the federal government, to local and state governments. There's been some suspicion under the surface within defense circles, intelligence circles, about this company, because the founder of this company was trained by the KGB, served in Russian military intelligence. but it was still being used in some non-critical areas within the federal government. Last week, about 10 days ago, the federal government said, we're no longer going to buy this, and they signaled in their statement that they think there might be some way that the Russian government could use this program to access what's going on and the systems that it is protecting. It didn't communicate that message very well to the local governments, to the state governments, and we did a survey and found that nationwide there are several localities, several school districts, several minor state agencies, even some agencies within the federal government still using this and have no plans to stop.
Wow. All right, so did the federal government, by the way, offer any specific, I don't know, window that hackers might use to get into through this software?
Well, there was a statement that they put out that sounded a lot like governmentese, legalese, gibberish, really. They said that the system of operational investigative measures is what they're concerned about. And the acronym for this is SORM. And there's a book that was written a couple years ago called The Red Web, and kind of talks about how there's this national system of surveillance that's allowed under Russian law. And this is really what they're referring to without being very specific about it. And they said the applicability, however, there's some perceived connection, according to GSA, that this antivirus software could be manipulated somehow under Russia's national system of eavesdropping. The experts we were talking about say that, you know, if there was active surveillance going on, it probably would be seen right now by a lot of the folks trying to be good cops on the Internet. Mm-hmm. But I guess the concern is that if Russia ever really wanted to, it could take control of Kaspersky in some way and use that to launch an attack. And an attack that's being orchestrated through an antivirus program, from all the experts we talked to, could be fairly devastating because those programs operate with the highest level of privilege. They basically have full access to your computer. Mm. And systems nationwide could be affected. So, you know, we're being careful here. The government's being a little obscure in what they're saying they're concerned about. You know, but this all kind of started to bubble up publicly in May when there was a hearing before the Senate Intelligence Committees, and they were talking about Russia and meddling. And Senator Marco Rubio asked, kind of out of the blue, asked the acting director of the FBI, would you put Kaspersky Lab software on your computer? And he said no.
Oh, wow.
And then they asked the director of the CIA, and he said the same thing. And the director of National Intelligence, and they went down the table, and everybody said no, they wouldn't put Kaspersky on their own computer. So it kind of begged the question, well, if they're not willing to put it on defense computers, then who should be using it? And so that's where we kind of went with our reporting in recent weeks.
Investigative reporter Aaron Davis from The Washington Post. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well, @GordonDeal. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending some Monday time with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if your social media feeds are anything like mine, there appears to be an awful lot of people amped up about today's solar eclipse. Don't count Alabama football coach Nick Saban among them, however. According to the Wall Street Journal, the famously dispassionate coach isn't impressed with the potential of seeing a once-in-a-lifetime cosmic event. As you've heard, people are traveling in droves to places that will have peak visibility. The Tennessee Titans even moved their practice schedule so that they could watch. Not Saban, however, who says he already knows what it's going to be like because the Weather Channel told him so. In fact, Saban even has a vacation home in Georgia in a spot that's supposed to be one of the best to watch the eclipse. But there's no chance the coach will be there, saying his house will probably be the only empty house on the whole lake.
Mm. Which is just bad timing for Coach Saban.
Yeah,
Because he's a football guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's an intense football guy.
Of course.
And the solar eclipse is happening on a day of the week that ends in D-A-Y.
Right.
So he is preoccupied with football those particular days.
I mean, yeah. I mean, if this was happening maybe March. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a month that would be a day where he'd be like, okay, to take a break from football for 2 minutes to go watch this
thing.
There is
not one. There was a time, I think, shortly after midnight, 6 or 7 months ago, where he had 2 minutes where he was not studying film.
Yeah.
The grandkids were over.
Sounds like he missed missed out on a great Airbnb opportunity, though, for that house on the lake. You probably got and hundreds of dollars for that.
That's
not that he needs the money, of course, but he probably could have gotten a little extra cash.
But again, Mike, when you're that much a student of football, there's no time to put the home on Airbnb.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
There's
he would have had
no
to take time to actually do that.
Yes.
Gotcha. And we're at T-minus 1 year before, potentially, Gordon, Cleveland Cavaliers fans will have to say goodbye again to hometown hero LeBron James. Rumors have already started flying that James will bolt to another team in a better position to win another championship when the opt-out in his contract comes up after this season. According to local TV reports, one store in Akron, Ohio is appealing to LeBron's hometown loyalty with stay-home t-shirts and hats bearing a crowned number 23. Another breakup would undoubtedly devastate Cleveland, which has made each of the last three NBA finals since James returned from the Miami Heat in 2014. This time, at least, he would leave behind a championship banner. Regardless of James' decision, let's hope purchasers aren't burning this apparel next summer.
Right.
It's already underway.
Wow.
We haven't even started the season yet.
T-minus 1 year. Is that what you said?
Yes.
T-minus
basically, next year. Summer, he would be eligible to head on out of Cleveland again.
Hmm. What if he just surprised everybody and joined the Browns?
Yes.
In an effort to raise a banner there.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. I think he'd actually be a big help to them.
Here's another thing, too. What if LeBron, Steph Curry, and Durant, what if they all went to the Knicks?
Yeah, good luck with that.
The Knicks would still lose that franchise.
Wishful thinking.
It's just dreadful. Thank you, Mike. 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
If you're familiar with cloud computing, you probably know that Amazon Web Services offers a complete set of secure compute, storage, application, and deployment services that help companies launch and scale their IT infrastructures while lowering costs. But did you know that you're still responsible for protecting your own AWS-based assets, meaning your applications and data, from advanced cyber threats? Protect your AWS with Barracuda Networks Advanced Firewall Solutions. Visit AWS Marketplace or barracuda.com/AWS to learn more.
Glad you're with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact michiganbusiness.org today. As millions of people move into position for today's solar eclipse, some airlines are encouraging travelers to get a little closer to the action. Southwest Airlines has touted five of its flights that offer the greatest likelihood of catching the best views of the moon's 93-minute journey past the sun. Passengers on its morning flights today from Seattle to St. Louis and from Denver to Nashville could have some of the best views in the country. Southwest, by the way, says it will offer cosmic cocktails and special viewing glasses to passengers on those flights. The Wall Street Journal says Alaska Airlines has an invitation-only charter flight for astronomy enthusiasts and eclipse chasers. Departing Portland, Oregon at 7:30 this morning, the plane will fly west over the Pacific first to give the passengers a sneak preview ahead of the rest of the U.S. The Federal Aviation Administration is expecting so much additional air traffic from private jets and smaller planes that it said it has set up temporary air traffic control towers in two cities in Oregon and two more in Nebraska. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, one of the biggest astronomical events in the century is finally here. A total solar eclipse will cross the U.S. from Oregon to South Carolina, starting in Oregon at 12 p.m. To viewers inside the path of totality, the moon will completely cover the sun, darkening the sky and revealing the star's hidden atmosphere. NASA Planetary Science Director Jim Green says he won't be taking a break from work.
What we want to look for is how extensive the atmosphere of the sun is. That's the new and unique thing that we as humans can experience during this eclipse.
The cloak of darkness has been known to make plants and animals behave strangely. It also creates a 360-degree sunset in which the horizon in every direction will glow as if twilight has arrived early. Spanish police are continuing the search for a man who they consider to be the final member of a cell that carried out vehicle attacks in Barcelona and a nearby town that killed 14 and injured more than 120. Police have declined to identify who they're looking for, but media reports say he's a 22-year-old Moroccan. President Trump will use a nationally televised address to outline the strategy he believes will best position the U.S. to eventually declare victory in Afghanistan after 16 years of combat and lives lost. The plan is expected to include the deployment of 4,000 more troops to the country, a move questioned by Democratic Senator Ben Cardin on Fox News.
Should we put more military in? Again, this is not the U.S. fight. I don't believe putting more American soldiers in Afghanistan is the answer.
Trump tweeted Saturday that he had reached a decision on the way forward in Afghanistan. Jerry Lewis epitomized what it meant to be a survivor in Hollywood. Through ups and downs in popularity, health troubles, and weight fluctuations, Lewis always figured out a way to battle back and stay relevant. Lewis received the Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award in 2009 for his tireless efforts in the fight against muscular dystrophy.
The humility I feel is staggering, and I know it'll stay with me for the rest of my life. Thank you and good night.
Lewis, who died yesterday at age 91, excelled in film, radio, nightclub performing, recording, and television.
Very good. Thank you, Jen. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Animal experts are baffled by the public's intense affection these days for sloths, a mammal that barely moves. Animal keepers have grown accustomed to people shedding tears upon seeing a sloth, even bawling hysterically on the ground. The Wall Street Journal says psychologists who study crying say people are wired to cry when they see things that seem vulnerable, like cute baby animals. Sloths are radically different from most creatures, by the way. They spend most of their lives hanging upside down from tree branches in the tropical rainforests of Central and South America. Here are some facts you may or may not need. It can take them a month to digest one leaf. Sloths typically move their bowels once a week, climbing slowly down the tree to do so, and, by the way, can lose up to a third of their body weight when this happens. Their natural expression looks like a smile. They are solitary creatures who are often stressed at the sight of humans. Sloth characters in children's movies like Zootopia have helped popularity, and sloths now star in weddings, proposals, and birthday parties for some reason. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.